The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We welcome you back. The second hour has ended, and I am really looking forward to this next guest. We had Alex Berenson on our program quite a few times during the height of the pandemic last summer with so much uncertainty. And we will ask him about that. There's certainly a lot of conversation, but I want to talk to him about my favorite intersection with Alex. And I first got to know him many years ago. He was a New York Times investigative reporter, then became a number one New York Times best-selling author with his John Wells series. He has branched into a different world, even though I know he's working on a book on COVID. His latest is entitled The Power Couple. The Wall Street Journal gave it a stunning review recently, saying it's one of the most unpredictable thrillers in years. I absolutely loved it. I gave it to my wife. She thought it was incredible. And Alex Berenson joins us. Alex, congratulations on the success of the book and everything else. Great to have you back.
Thanks, Paul. And not just because it takes place in SEC country.
When it takes a big part of it takes place in Birmingham. Yeah, I mentioned that earlier. And where else is it? Alabama,
Houston,
Texas.
Too. Although I would you call Houston SEC territory?
Well, Texas A&M is out there, so I would agree. The Birmingham connection really got me going, having spent most of my adult life there. But let's start there because there's so many other things to get to, but. You had a true and successful protagonist, and you decided to go in a completely different direction here. Why?
So the Wells novels, I've written 12 of them, and I think there's a couple of things about writing a series character. You get to know him very well. You get to know his world very well. In some ways, it's a little bit like life, though. Unless you're just going to completely be James Bond is just sort of toss the history. You have to be honest and honorable to the character, and sort of, you know, he's going to grow older, and in some ways his freedom of action is going to change a little bit. And Wells is a guy who's very much in the field. He doesn't really like office politics. He doesn't like the politics of the CIA. And so at some point, I think he's almost, maybe he has one mission left in him, but he's too, I didn't want him to be the 50-year-old who's fighting with 20-somethings and beating them. Cause it's not realistic. And the other thing is, so that's sort of like the character point of view. From a creative point of view, I wanted to see if I could write a female protagonist. You know, two of the three main characters in the Power Couple are women, Rebecca and her daughter, Kira. And one of the things that I really liked about the response to the book is a lot of, you can look on Goodreads and see the reviews from, a lot of just, regular female readers. And they're not saying like, oh, this guy just wrote, some caricature of a woman. These are, these characters are real and they feel, in fact, they sometimes say, I don't like Rebecca, but nobody's like, oh, he just wrote, Betty Boop. And so I wanted to see if I could do that. And I feel like I did do that. And The Power Couple is kind of two books in one. There's a domestic thriller element to it where you see this marriage and you see the secrets in it. And then there's the kidnapping of Kira, which takes place early on in the book. And so the book almost, it takes place over a weekend and over 20 years. It's the marriage, but it's also the kidnapping. And I wanted to see if I could sort of make that work. And I hope it did work.
I'm particularly interested maybe because it's hard to just write about a city and nail it, but you did the character, the protagonist in the book, and I think at some point early in her FBI career moved to Birmingham, spent a lot of time in Montgomery. I mean, you really you got that part of it down quite well.
Well, thanks. I mean, I've been to Birmingham a few times on various reasons, so I've never lived in the South, but it's a place where I would like to live for a few years because I think it's a part of America that if you don't live there, it's easy to caricature. When in reality, it's a very interesting, arguably the most interesting part of the whole country. I hope I caught some of that, and some of the attitudes in the book that Brian, that the husband, gets because he's not really working. He's not the primary wage earner. And, you know, that might be more okay in Brooklyn than it is in Birmingham. And, you know, that's part of the tension in
yeah,
the book.
True.
Is that he doesn't feel that good about that, and he feels worse about it as time goes on.
I can tell you that firsthand. I live that experience in Birmingham. I won't get. I never want to ever give the ending of away, but I will tell you, it's the ending of this book is one of the most stunning that you will ever read, and not you, but the audience. And I'll leave it there. I know the cliche question is, you know, when does the movie come out?
I'm hoping for news on that very soon. I can't really say more than that. I will say there's someone whose name, if she winds up being attached to it, it would be great. Okay. And I'm hoping to have news really soon.
Understand.
And I mean, it'd be very exciting because I think, you know, there's a handful of actresses who have the star power to pull this off, and this person is one of them. And so it'd just be great.
No, I understand completely. Let me ask you about the next project you're working on. I saw you say where you're currently working or will have a book out on the COVID experience at some point. What can you tell us about that?
So it's so strange. You know, so I had a Wells novel out in 2018 that I wrote Tell Your Children in 2019, which is nonfiction about cannabis. Then The Power Couple came out earlier this year. I actually finished it before COVID, and it has got nothing to do with COVID. And now I have a contract to write a book that will be out later this year, really about the crisis and our response to it. You know, from the point of view, as you know, I don't know how many of your readers follow me on Twitter or sort of know my point of view on this. That we have profoundly overreacted to COVID. That not that it's not serious and not that it hasn't killed people. Obviously, it has. It is and it has. But that. Shutting down society, certainly closing schools, disrupting, you know, college and young adulthood for a lot of people, for everybody really has been a tremendous mistake. That so many people who are at very, very low risk of, you know, death from this or even serious illness, have had their lives just profoundly disrupted for essentially very little benefit and that, you know, the people who've died, if, unfortunately, if you look at Europe, if you look at sort of a lot of the world, not all of the world, but if you look at a lot of the world, Europe, South America, Central America, it's very hard to say that lockdowns and that the other measures have done any good. Frankly, I'm very, very happy to see that Texas and Mississippi are following Florida and moving to reopen. That's what the book is about. I think the people who follow me on Twitter and like me will love it. I think the people who hate me will hate it. But I think it's very important. And look, I think I'm right. But I frankly think even if I'm 100% wrong, it's very important to have somebody saying this because 95 or 98% of the media outside of the conservative media, won't question anything. And I think that's led to a lot of the problems in our policies. And you may remember the last time we talked, it was, I don't know whether it was June or July, but we were talking about the college football season. And I think I told you I thought it should go ahead, and I thought it would go ahead, and it did go ahead. And, you know, obviously there have been cases of COVID among the college football population, but I can't recall one case of a serious illness, in a player. And there were people out there predicting, oh, three people or five players or seven players will die if we do this. And that was just complete nonsense. In the entire college population, I think there's been a handful of deaths from COVID.
No, there were none, and there's really no evidence, Alex, that there was any transmission on the field either.
That's right. That's right. I think Alabama said yesterday they're gonna have a full stadium next year.
They did. We're chatting with Alex Berenson, and I'm going to give his Twitter handle out, and it's an intriguing follow at Alex Berenson. That's Alex. Berenson for those of you. Alex, you spent a long time at the New York Times, so it's not like you just are sitting at home, taking pot shots at the mainstream media. But for those who missed you last summer or who have not heard you on Fox or heard your speech last week in Florida or heard you here. What is your biggest criticism of the news media?
Well, you know, COVID aside, and that's a big issue, obviously. I mean, I think we're in a really dangerous place in terms of the media. That you have journalists at the New York Times, and by the way, I worked at the Times for 10 years. I left on good terms. I left to write John Wells' novels. I still love the Times, as an institution. But you have reporters there, and reporters at the Washington Post, and reporters at CNN who are trying to police other people's speech, who are saying that Fox News should not be carried on a basic cable tier, even though MSNBC and CNN are, and who are asking Amazon and Facebook and Google to try to essentially censor people. And even asking the federal government to get involved in what can only be described as censorship. And so I think that's a terrible, terrible mistake, whether you're on the left or the right. I think the solution to bad speech is more speech. I think if these folks think that their message is not being heard, even though they control, again, almost the entire media, they should be asking themselves why that is, not trying to stop other people from being heard. I was a reporter at the Times for 10 years, and I take my reputation for accuracy very seriously. Not to say I don't sometimes make mistakes, not to say that I haven't predicted things that have been wrong at times, but I always try to source my stuff with data from the government or with scientific papers or people on the record. And, I think the attitude that, that these papers have and that, journalists at them have that, we're going to try to shut down dissenting speech or speech we don't like is very problematic. And I want to say one more thing about this, which is the Power Couple has, again, nothing to do with COVID. It's a thriller. You'll like it or you won't. The Power Couple did get that review in the Wall Street Journal, which, of course, is owned by News Corp, which owns Fox News. But the Power Couple did not get reviewed by the New York Times or the Washington Post or, and I did not go on CNN or MSNBC. And those are all places that had reviewed some of the Wells novels that it had me on when those books came out. And I personally can't prove this, but I wonder sometimes whether or not that's not, because I expressed these opinions about COVID that people didn't like at those papers. And so that's when they did that in the 50s, when they punished people's artistic creations for their, political views, we called it blacklisting. And, that's viewed as a real stain on American history, and I'd hate to think it's repeating itself.
It's an interesting point. We both know way too much. But the difference is you're going to write a book about it.
That's right. I mean, I'm very fortunate, Paul, in that, I have this independent audience, and, it's what I said at CPAC. I sort of belong to the leaders, and that's freedom. But it's also it puts pressure on me. I don't have an institution protecting me. At the same time, I can say what I like, and I both value that freedom and know that it comes with responsibility.
Well, love to have you back and talk more about that. I also can't recommend this book enough. I don't say that as a fan of your writing, because a lot of us have, and you included, we've read some of our favorite authors and go, why in the world did he write that? This is not that situation. This book, The Power Couple, was phenomenal.
Well, thank you. And I would love, at some point in my life, I got to see an SEC game. I got to tell you that, hopefully in a full state.
Yeah, we've talked about that before, and because I've known Alex a long time, we will do that, and I think we're getting pretty close to it. And I have a feeling, Alex, you would find yourself pretty popular in an SEC stadium.
I suppose it's possible. There's a headline on, I think it was on the ESPN website today. It said, UCLA, anticipates a full schedule and return to normal in 2021. I thought, yeah, that means Alabama's going to win the championship again if it's a return to normal. Of course, they won this year. That was the only normal thing about the college football season.
Yeah, you would go over much bigger and better at the Alabama-LSU game in Baton Rouge this year than you would at your alma mater playing Harvard at that game.
That is true. But I think I'd rather be certainly the quality of football would be.
Yeah, the Harvard. I've always wanted to get to the Harvard Yale game, not for the game, but for the things that you experienced as a student. Just the snobbery and just for 3 hours to act like I'm somebody, but I haven't made it yet.
Well, you know, you'd be less impressed than you thought. Drunk college students are drunk college students.
I get that impression. Alex, all the best. Come back soon. Always enjoyed it.
Paul,
always enjoyed
so
it. It was a blast. Alex Berenson joining us. The name of the book, The Power Couple. We'll take a break. Much more to come right after this. The college basketball season is heating up, and that means the Wendy's Wooden Watch has begun. Go to ESPN.com and search Wooden Watch for the list of the Wooden Award late season top 20 nominees to watch as the season rolls on. And I am watching so many of these young guys. I've got players from all over the country. How about Charles Bassey from Western Kentucky? Jared Butler from Baylor has been absolutely phenomenal. The John R. Wooden Award, presented by Wendy's.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Back to the phones we go at 855-242-7285. Looking forward to talking to you. Many more guests will be dropping by, including Mike Griffith. Speaking of Mike, I want to play a couple of bites here from both Dan Mullen and Kirby Smart, starting with Dan Mullen.
Oh, well, have confidence in him. You know, part of that is making sure you understand the strengths and the weaknesses. I think one thing, you know, that we missed out on last year is identifying the strengths and weaknesses of our players. We're throwing a lot at them with installation. Okay. And now I'm going to bet at the end of spring, there's going to be a bunch of stuff we did this spring that we're not going to use or we're going to throw out and just say, hey, that really doesn't fit the profile of this team. But, you know, we throw a lot at the guys to see what they do well, what they can handle, what fits us. And, you know, we didn't get to do that last year. You know, when you find out strengths and weaknesses of players. And so, you know, we're really spending a lot of time on that. I have a lot of confidence in those guys. You know, I mean, they're very hard workers. You know, you look at, you know, obviously Emery and Anthony coming in and those guys with experience, you know, it was great at different times. I know last year, even though we played an all SEC schedule, still throwing Anthony out there for plays. So he's played in SEC games out on the field. Obviously, Emory's gotten a lot of experience over the last couple of years. So, you know, they've been on the field. They have that experience. And now just throwing a lot of the offensive at them and see where they're most comfortable. What, you know, when it's just all on them, what are they doing at a high level? What do we want to concentrate? How does it fit the personnel around them to you know, those guys to, you know, where we seem to click? And we'll kind of hone it in around that. And then it's great having the two freshman quarterbacks here because those guys, you know, they're getting valuable reps right now, you know, to in case, you know, You know, I mean, you don't want to get to the backup quarterback sometimes, but you know, that can make for a tougher season. But those guys are getting that experience to learn the system. You know, we're going to play to the strengths of the quarterback. We're also going to play to the strengths of all the players around him as well. And, you know, and so, you know, they're going to have to slightly adjust onto what everybody else around him does well. I mean, obviously, if you see Emery, I mean, you know, he's more – I expect you're going to see the opportunity for him to make more out-of-the-box plays maybe than Kyle did. Kyle, I thought was really athletic within the pocket, could extend in a real short area, extend plays. One thing Emery's going to bring to the table is ability to really extend plays. You know, he has tremendous arm talent, a really strong arm, so his ability to extend plays, to potentially scramble, keep plays alive, and then the arm strength to make throws down the field that, you know, will keep that'll change things up. So I think the improvisation at the quarterback position will be one thing that'll be very different.
Dan Mullen, also this week, Kirby Smart spoke out.
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't open with a hearty congratulations to Joni and her staff and her team. I know she'll be the first to share in the accolades from being SEC Women's Basketball Coach of the Year. I think, you know, our conference speaks for itself in terms of the women's basketball coaches, and for her to be the SEC Women's Coach of the Year is pretty special. I know in our household, we've enjoyed watching them perform this year, and they've done some great things. A really exciting team to watch up and down the court, and very athletic. So congrats to Joni. Us having spring practice last year or not doesn't control what we do this year. I mean, obviously the objective is to get each and every player better. We have, I think the other day we had a team run, and I asked everybody to stand up who had not been through a spring practice at Georgia. And I'm going to venture to say it was 65 to 70% of the team stood up. And that's a scary thing. You're like, well, what does that matter? They haven't been through a spring practice. It just shows you the youth you have, the lack of practices and experiences your team has. I mean, 16 mid-years, a lot of new walk-ons. Nobody that was here last year for the first year had gone through that. So when you look at all those things, it kind of combines you to say, wow, got a really, really young group from that perspective. But yeah, we plan on starting, I think it's 2 weeks from today, which would be, I think it's March 16th. Everybody needs spring practice. Let's be honest. There's nobody on our roster. I mean, you could even say the returning fifth-year guys, it's important that they get the spring practice they have. But for the quarterback position, the continuity of the offense, that's critical. You know, you want to be able to get some relationships built there. Continuity towards the end of the year began to improve. Obviously, offensively, we've got a lot of guys that are coming back, but that doesn't mean you're going to have success because they're coming back. I mean, I think the more the mantra or the message out there is you're going to be great, the tougher our job becomes internally to motivate and have guys. You know, we've had off seasons here where we had returning quarterback, returning backs, returning these guys, two great tackles, and hey, did that equate to instant success? Not necessarily. So what you do and what you earn is what you get in the off season, and nothing's given to you. There's no entitlement, and I think JT understands that. And I think that the rapport with the receiver group for all the quarterbacks is going to be extremely important in terms of developing our offense and getting timing in the passing game.
Dan Mullen and Kirby Smart. Busy hour, half hour there with Alex Berenson. Earlier we had Cecil Hurt. Mike Griffith will join us next hour. Bill Conley on his best quarterbacks of the playoff era a little bit later on. And when we come back, your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
We welcome you back here on a Wednesday afternoon. More of your phone calls coming in right now at 855-242-7285. And Ross is in Birmingham. Hey, Ross. Ross, you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I sure can.
Sounds like your buddy Alex is writing a heck of a book. You're right. He'll be very popular in Bryant-Denny Stadium.
He's a, you know, he's a New York guy, went to Yale. You wouldn't, New York Times, you wouldn't expect it. But he, I am definitely getting him down for a game this year.
Yeah, let's get him some, somebody needs to get him some box seats.
Oh, he, he absolutely.
Well, I have a basketball question. First of all, Roll Tide. And is the SEC, are they going to make the champs, you know, have a replay that A&M game that got postponed? You know, how's that going to work?
Well, yeah, I mean, A&M did not play, I don't think, the entire month of February. So there's too much to make up. I think they're playing tonight and Saturday in the tournament. So that will be, you know, those games will just go by the wayside.
Good. I'm glad. I didn't want to have to play them, you know.
Well, I think A&M was able to make up one, I think Saturday they're making up a game, but that's there was only one available date to make up, so it was just too hard to make up 4 weeks of games.
Understood. Well, thank you for taking my call, Paul.
Hey, thank you very much. Great to have you on. And we've had quite a reaction of just hearing from various people about Alex Behrens. And let's get to the calls from JJ. Who's also in Alabama on this Wednesday. Hey, JJ.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing?
What is up with you?
Not much. I just wanted to call in about Alabama basketball. I do wonder if they are going to make it to the final eight.
Well, I think they have a chance. I mean, it was an interesting conversation with Cecil Hurd earlier, and I mean, they have the team, but I will tell. I remember Tennessee 2 years ago. They were number one seed. They got a bad. I think they were playing Purdue. They got a bad matchup, and you know they lost the game. It was controversial with bad. It can happen, and I think Alabama is certainly capable of a Elite Eight or a Final Four run. But you also have to be leery. And until Sunday a week, when you see who they're matched up against, it's virtually impossible to make a prediction.
I'm just hoping, though, that Bama will go because I'm a big-time Bama supporter.
Well, if you are a Bama supporter, you should be enjoying this year. Well, thank you very much. You take care of yourself, and thanks for the call.
What's up, bro?
Eddie is up next. What's up, Eddie?
Hey, Paul. What's up, man? Roll Tide.
Great to have you on.
Hey, Paul, I just love the interview you did the other day with Duncan, man. That was a beautiful thing, man.
Well done. Yeah, for those who missed it, we'll come back to it a little bit later when Griffin shows up. But Elle was on fire yesterday.
Yeah, she was, Paul. Anybody that has a problem with that interview must not be a true Georgia fan. You know, I didn't take offense to it. They should have took more offense to legends, Paul, than anything. I love – hey, that was the call of the year, Paul, legend. What do you think?
Legend has had a few epic calls in his career here.
Hey, I couldn't have put that any better. I mean, because every year, man, we hyping Georgia up to win championships and predicting them to be all good. And, Paul, they're just not pulling it off, my man. I know it's not Kirby. Kirby's a great coach. And I hate when they talk bad about Kirby because, he's definitely not the problem. He's the solution. It just takes time. So
what do you think the problem is?
Hey, Paul, it's just like this, Paul. Winning a championship is so hard. It takes – I mean, all the ingredients got to come together, Paul, at the same time. You know, I kind of compare Georgia to Clemson. Clemson hadn't won a championship, I think, before Dabo won it, too. I think, 1983 was probably their last one, too. And they're not even – you know, I don't even think they had a top recruiting class. So it's locked in, and people say, well, how is Dabo doing it? And Georgia is not doing it. And I don't even think Dabo has a top, a number one recruiting class, Paul. So it's luck. I don't know what it is, Paul. I'm a Bama fan, and it's confusing me. So I have no clue. I just hope Kirby hang in there, and I hope the Georgia fans hang in there because they're going to get one. I'm definitely going to get one.
Well, good to hear from you, Eddie.
All right, roll damn tide, Paul.
You got it. Great, great. Thanks. Mike is up next. Hey, Mike. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi, Paul.
How's everything going?
Going good. You several conversations you've had that Memphis gets involved over the last couple weeks.
Brings me back
to old home week. Especially when you were talking with Jay Randolph in the 1964 season for the Cardinals.
Oh yeah, Jay Randolph called you. It took me back, and I don't know if you were old enough to remember that season, but that was
I was actually 14, and my father was in the hotel business, and one of his managers, his son, was in the farm system of St. Louis, and I actually got a baseball autographed by all the Cardinals in 64, which was something that's the only baseball memorabilia I ever had, and I have since passed it on to my brother's son, who's a baseball fanatic. But I graduated. I know, talking before, hearing you, that you graduated from White Station. I graduated from Oak Haven in 68. So a lot of great years in the 60s there in Memphis.
Yeah, and, you know, it was also such a turbulent time, as you well remember. And
oh, yeah.
I'll never forget, because I got to know Coach Bartow much later when he was in Birmingham. But that Memphis basketball team that ended up playing for the national championship in 1973 is given a lot of credit for saving Memphis. And it was a racially divided town, especially in the aftermath of Dr. King's assassination. He came down there for the sanitation strike, and it was a terrible place. And that basketball team, 2 years later, 3 years later, 4 years later, unified the city in a way that I don't think it had ever been, at least, well, not in my lifetime.
Yeah, and beyond that, in the later years when Memphis had a lot of success in basketball as well, whether your religion was different or your color was different, but that team did bring the whole city together. So it was.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't lived in Memphis
basketball fan
since the 70s. So I keep up with it, but and I know it's had its runs, but I wouldn't trade that time for anything in terms of just I'm talking about from a sports standpoint.
Yes, sir, I understand, and we've grown as a nation. My question is, that was just a comment. I anytime you talk about Memphis, it just kind of gives me that old home feeling. But what I'd like to know is, this is about football. Where the University of Memphis, what rank was their recruiting class? Hopefully, it was under 100. So,
yeah, I think it was pretty good. I think the Memphis, I never thought I would say this, but the Memphis football program is in better shape than the basketball program.
Yeah, maybe University of Memphis basketball now is 16-6 and they play Houston, I think, Saturday night, and they need to win that game probably to get into
the
tournament. Secondly, I'm an SEC fan as well. I have lived near Arkansas before, and Ole Miss and Tennessee and Alabama, enjoy all those teams, and I don't know if I can pick one over the other who I like better, but also the rankings and those. I know we always give Alabama, LSU, Clemson, Ohio State like the first 10 or so in the recruiting classes. I would love to hear, all the SEC teams, what they finished up as far as their recruiting class in this past year. If you can,
okay, yeah,
can
no,
have
it's
that information
well,
at some point.
You know, Alabama, Georgia, LSU. All finished in the top three or four. I'll see if I can dig it up. But, hey, thank you very much for the call. It's good to hear from you. We are heading to a break, and if you want to get in, this is a pretty good opportunity for you at 855-242-7285. We've already had Cecil and Alex Berenson on, Mike Griffith at the top of the hour, Bill Conley later on, and plenty of time for your calls. We're back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're back here on a Wednesday afternoon. Guests coming up shortly, including Mike Griffith. How about Mitch right now in South Carolina? Hey, Mitch.
Mr. Paul, how's it going today?
We are doing pretty well. How about you?
I'm doing well. Always doing well. God blesses me too much, Sally. Before I ask the question, and please let me ask my question. Before I ask my question, I truly want to invite you. The weather is getting too pretty. We're only an hour and a half away. I will gladly pay for your dinner, either me come to Charlotte or you come to Spartanburg. I have to meet you one day. I don't want your autograph. I want your hand.
Well, no, listen, things are getting a lot easier, and you're right about the weather. I mean, it was like 62 degrees today, but it felt like 80. I think that's just because it's been so cold, but you have my word that will happen as soon as we can figure it out. How about that?
Well, I don't know your policy on meeting guests, but I mean callers. But if you ever I would love to.
I'll tell you this, and you may have heard me mention there's a couple of filmmakers in Hollywood who are about a year in, which means they lost about 9 months because of COVID on doing a documentary on this program. And mm-hmm. I communicated, I can't remember if I told him or texted him, but I sent him a call from you not long ago because they want to interview callers. So
I was so moved by something you said. I don't want to meet them.
Well, no, I'm just telling you, that might be the time I could we could figure it out. When they set up the interview with you, I might just come over there.
Well, that'd be wonderful. My question, and I guess this is good timing since Mike is following me. With the tight end that just decommitted from Florida, my question for you is: didn't prior to the COVID situation, didn't the SEC have a policy that players could not transfer inter-conference?
Yes. Well, you couldn't go from, let's say, South Carolina to Georgia without sitting out.
Okay. But they lightened it up because of the COVID situation.
It's still, I think that it depends. I think it's still there, but there.
I think you know what my question is. Is if this tight end were to transfer to Georgia, would they allow him to play immediately?
I don't know. I think it depends on circumstances. Sometimes it depends on why you left a certain school.
Well, he's had one free pass to transfer to one SEC school,
but I'm not certain, Mitch, if he ever was eligible there.
Well, this is my theory on why he transferred. There's no cemented quarterback at Florida, and he might have got there and realized the quarterback situation wasn't that great, and J.D. Daniels is supposed to be pretty good at Georgia.
Yeah, I don't know. We haven't had a chance to talk to anybody down there in terms of.
I just remember Mike Griffin just bloviating on how Florida just got a wonderful player, and I can just imagine what he wants to say now that he's available again.
Mike Griffith and bloviating. I don't know if I've you caught me by surprise there.
I know. Anyway, it's so good to talk to you, and I'll talk to you later.
Okay, Mitch.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, speaking of bloviating, however you would like to describe it, Griffith will join us here in a few minutes. We've had a really fun show. Alex Berenson joining us a minute ago, Cecil Hurt, later Bill Conley. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. So we still have a long way to go. Pretty quiet day in news. Conference tournaments are starting to happen, mainly women. Some of the men's are also about to kick in. And, of course, the SEC tournament begins next Wednesday. And we certainly will have live coverage. We will take a break. More to come.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.